Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday, December 6th, 2010. Boy, where has the time gone? This year has just shot right by. But don't worry, folks, because if you're anything like me, the older I get, the better I was. Once again, I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me produce my show and for his advice. Don, are you out there?
I'm out there, in there, and beside there.
Around there. Good. There. The karma is, your karma is flowing everywhere. I'd also like to tell our listeners, I am 2 weeks now. I've been healing from I had an emergency detached retina surgery. And it was in my left eye where I also had cataract surgery back in March. This has been an awful year for me. I mean, I know other people have their woes, but, you know, I'm telling you mine right now. And if anybody has a right to play the blues or sing the blues right now, it's me. But so anyway.
Would you like me to cue up some blues music?
No, I'll just keep ranting here a little bit. But I just want everybody to would like to remind everybody or make them aware of the fact that, man, I'll tell you, we're lucky to be living in these times where this technology is available to us. Because 80, 100 years ago, there was no cataract surgery. You didn't get detached retina surgery, though. So thank goodness for the private sector and the market and what free people are allowed to do and create. Because I'm so thankful I had a brilliant eye surgeon who got me in right away and took care of things. So and of course, we joke about Obamacare, about the whole thing. I said, Doc, isn't all this free now? Isn't this, you know, he laughed.
You got to sneak over the border for that.
Yes, that's true. That's true. They bring the drugs in across the border. We go there for a cheaper health care. So I guess that's how it works in the mixed economy here. Don gave me a little good advice last week. I don't know if it was on or off air, but he suggested I speak more about Austrian economics. And that's what I'm going to do this evening
during the show. Just
was it during the show? Okay, I don't remember exactly when it was.
So we sort of prophesied that you may be doing that.
Yeah, and thank you for that. It was a good idea because I know I've been jumping here and jumping there because I'm sort of a multitasker. And also, of course, music is a huge part of my life, so I can't help but having it mixed into different things in my outlook. And since I'm a drummer, I'm able to have some fairly decent four-way coordination right there. So in a sense, my jumping for different topics and all this kind of thing, I guess maybe it has something to do with the drumming and the multitasking abilities in that aspect. But tonight I'm going to stay focused on the mostly on Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty. Now, many of you know that I've been talking about and pushing secession as a solution to our problems in this country that has been largely caused, when you look at things, by the federal government. The federal government messes things up terribly here at home and abroad. It destroys the economy. It destroyed the monetary system. It ruined the gold standard through FDR when he confiscated our gold through the Emergency Monetary Credit Act. I believe it was in 1933 or 1934 where they confiscated people's gold like they had some right to take people's property away. Of course, you know, through the magic of politicians and their imaginary wands, they just wave a wand and all of a sudden something that was legal is illegal or, you know, the reverse. So anyway, this is what the federal government has done. This is what it has wreaked upon our country. So what I suggest is that we free Americans can go our separate ways. As Thomas Jefferson mentioned that he's foresaw America breaking up into several republics in the future, and he wished them well. Now, you notice I said republic. I didn't say democracy. The two aspects of democracy that I accept, Ludwig von Mises, our Austrian mentor, economist mentor, said that democracy is the peaceful way in which we choose our leaders or our rulers. I'll give him that. And, you know, democracy of just, you know, just our voting, plus even a more important democracy, which people take part of every day is the democracy of the marketplace, where people vote with their money for what they want. People are making contracts every day. If you go to McDonald's and order a hamburger, you've just made a contract. So anyway, democracy, I do not care for democracy in general. I believe that it's mobocracy, and it's like, you know, the old saying about three wolves and one sheep voting on what they want for breakfast. And if those who are all the real pro-democracy people, well, how far do you want to take democracy? Would you put your rights up to a vote? Would you trust all your fellow citizens to vote as you would like to see if your rights were put up to a vote? I think not. So I'm pushing a very strictly limited constitutional republic, or republics. I wouldn't care if there were 50 separate republics, and if Washington was stripped of, say, 95% of its power to, it's supposed to have a military. Well, it can't even do that right. It can't even run that efficiently. And it's the military budget is astronomical. It's more than most of our combined other nations' defense budgets combined. We're really not threatened by any other countries, but we keep stationing troops overseas, which is a huge drain on our economy, war or not. The war in Iraq is costing us, Afghanistan, I believe it's about $2 billion a week. So that's, say $100 billion a year. Meanwhile, our infrastructure here is in badly need of repair. Millions of people out of work, more people going out of work. If those of you out there who think that the federal government can be reformed, there's still some swamp land in Florida for you. So my premise is that it cannot be reformed, but good solutions lie ahead, peaceful solutions. And everything I advocate does not threaten anybody's life, their liberties, their property, nor do I seek to tax anyone further, and nor do I seek to regulate anyone further. So as I speak of my secession solution, I'll talk about my little preamble here. I wrote it prior to July 4th, but I put it out on July 4th for my friends and whatnot to see, and I've got a lot of favorable responses. But since July 4th symbolizes the American colonies demanding their secession and independence from Great Britain, I contend that now it is time to demand our separation and secession from Washington, D.C., because when the back in the colonial days, when the colonies seceded from Great Britain, they did not seek to take over London in control. Neither do we seek to take over Washington, D.C. in control. We just want to say goodbye to Washington, D.C. So I view secession as taking the 10th Amendment to its logical conclusion. The 10th Amendment talks about how the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So I'm taking it to its logical conclusion, which is a peaceful secession. There ain't no slavery anymore. Not that that was the main purpose of the Civil War, which isn't really the Civil War, it's a war of Northern aggression. So my secession is based upon Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty and property rights. And my underlying goal and my underlying theme for everybody is liberty, property, and peace. As the great Austrian economist, Austrian-born economist actually, also Friedrich Hayek said that governments don't have all the information. They could never possibly contain all the information to make centrally planned decisions from. It's a ridiculous myth or a pipe dream to think that that's even possible. So, and governments partake in another phrase I like from Hayek. He called them clusters of errors. Obama comes to mind, although they've come to their senses a bit about this tax thing. But anyway, back to Jefferson, who thought that he foresaw the U.S. breaking off into several republics. I agree with Jefferson because I see Washington, D.C. as an irreversible cesspool of corruption, of massive debt, and waste, regardless of which party is in office. If people think the Republicans are going to clean things up or fix things, I think they've got another story coming. I mean, I'm glad some of these people were elected, but who knows how they're going to govern. And when the first crisis rolls along, oh, we had to spend this, we had to do this, we had to do that. I mean, one of the first things that Reagan did when he took office was he sort of pressured his Republican Congress to raise the debt ceiling. Well, that's what government wants to do now, or Obama wants to do now. And I know Ron Paul's opposed to that. Hopefully Rand Paul and any sane Republican. I mean, that's just like telling a heroin addict, well, we're going to increase your dosage. We don't want to, but you know, now you can have a bigger dose until we increase it again. So back to Washington, D.C., which is actually nothing more than a federal welfare warfare state, which continues to further bankrupt our nation. So it's long overdue for all of us to demand independence and separation from Washington, D.C. I mean, after all, ladies and gentlemen, it was the states that created the federal government. It wasn't the other way around. Yet at the same time, as we know, or those of us who are not in denial know, that Washington, D.C. remains out of control and out of touch with the people. You know, yet ironically enough, Washington, D.C., which we seek a divorce from, has supported secession and separation across the globe, including Taiwan, South Korea, South Vietnam, Eastern Europe, and Kosovo. So if it's good enough for Washington, it's got to be good enough for us states, or new republics, if you will. So what does this mean, secession? Well, it means that the newly seceded states or territories, they would self-govern and self-finance. All newly seceded states or territories would pay for and maintain their own public works. So they wouldn't be sending all this tax revenue to the expensive, needless middleman of Washington, D.C., who then takes our money and doles it back to different states. So right there, that would cut out a lot of lobbyists, and it would make states more efficient with how they fund their public works, bridges, roads, highways. They would be more efficient right there. And I foresee in a country which would, of course, have micro taxes. Well, I don't have problems with in a state of micro taxes and micro regulations. I would not mind having toll roads and toll bridges, because people would have much more disposable income and they could pay for these things. You use it, you pay for it. It's not that big of a deal. You go to the grocery store, you pay for what you get there. You get on a road, you pay a toll. But your taxes are so much smaller, probably 90% smaller. Now, the country, the new territories I recommend, the ones that secede, should always maintain the fact that they want to maintain an atmosphere of liberty, property, and peace. And I suggest also mixing in these three real-world examples. That would be the free markets of Hong Kong, the self-governing Swiss Canton system, and the social tolerance of Holland. And I would include in a strictly limited constitutional republic that obeys and protects individual rights, I would include that archaic – some of those archaic doctrines of the U.S. Constitution, of limited government, of individual rights, those sort of things that we've gotten away from. Well, we haven't. The government's gotten away from, because it's the government of the government, by the government, for the government. And if anybody thinks otherwise, well – you're dreaming, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion. So in the Constitutional Republic I lay out, this Constitutional Republic obeys its Constitution and it respects and protects individual rights, unlike the Washington, D.C. of today, that without any constitutional authority and against the overwhelming will of most of the people, Washington continues to push war, bailouts, corporate welfare, crony capitalism, corporate socialism, political correctness, huge deficits, inflation, big taxes, massive overregulation, and a continuously lagging on, tragic, unconstitutional, interventionist, unchanging status quo foreign policy. So you must be thinking out there, PK, boy, we don't hear this on talk radio and then the Talking Heads. That's right, folks. Boy, would I love a shot at taking a shot at the status quo, all those neoconservatives that, you know, have the airwaves and the status quo on the main networks, but they would never let someone like me on. So when we look at our troubled nation, we can easily see here in America that each and every state already has a legislature. It has courts, judges, policemen, firemen, National Guard units and militias. We have jails, prisons, roads, utility companies, newspaper, the internet, TV stations, radio stations, libraries, schools, universities, museums, landfills, recycling centers, daycare centers, retirement homes, parks, golf courses, tennis courses, sports complexes. We have farms. We have supermarkets, churches, synagogues. We have pharmacies, malls, theaters, factories, and numerous types of businesses and services, all types of charities and much more. So every state already has so much of what we need to function, and every state should still have a free press, gun ownership rights, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, religious freedom, a free press. So we already have all these things. Again, to my point, Washington, D.C. is a very expensive middleman that intimidates the states and tries to tell them how to run their business. Washington, D.C. is so high on its, you know, high on its horse that it just thinks it is the lord and master of not only the U.S., but the rest of the world with this awful, arrogant foreign policy. Again, I make the distinction, you know, you talk about Obama apologizing for America. I don't apologize for America or the people, but I do apologize for this horrific federal government. It is so intrusive here at home and abroad. So I've covered what every state already has so much of. In fact, every state already has the Department of Commerce, Department of Health, Departments of Education, Agriculture, Transportation, Environment, and many more. So why are we wasting billions for the same federal agencies when we have those regulatory agencies here? Not that we even really need them, but yet it's certainly a step in the right direction to decentralize you know, what's going on right now. So those of you listening out there to these ideas, I hope you like what you hear, because I certainly like what I'm saying. Anyway, here's another thing. The newly seceded states or territories will not have a huge, unrestricted central government which stirs up international trouble, you know, gets involved in other countries' civil wars or disputes just to justify expanding the military budget and getting more of our young fellows killed overseas and needless political and military conflicts that do not involve our country and only make us more susceptible to terrorism and hatred. Again, this is not stirred up by the American people. This is stirred up by the federal government. And I don't like to use the word we or America. I say what the federal government did. I clearly say what's going on. That's why I'm a fan of Julian Assange, the evil person behind WikiLeaks that's pulling the curtain back and showing that the emperor certainly wears no clothes and these deals cut between countries and the, you know, the, just the, what's the word? Just the kind of low life kind of stuff that goes on between politicians and bureaucrats. And it's all wrapped up in patriotism. We're not supposed to question it. But I like seeing the regime threatened or even brought down by this, because I look forward to the restoration of the American Republic, or should I say republics. So as I just said, the newly seceded states will not have a huge unrestricted central government stirring up trouble. There will be no empire or nation building. There will be no troops stationed throughout the world. There will be no out of control, endlessly expanding military industrial complex, which sees opportunity in endless civil wars and conflicts throughout the world. Now, after there's, when these, if these states were to secede or these new territories would secede, U.S. citizens from any other states and foreigners who already own property and businesses in newly seceded states will not have their property or businesses threatened or disturbed. So U.S. citizens from states who have not left the union are still free to come and go, to work, to reside, to buy property, and to invest. Roads, bridges, power lines, railroad tracks, and radio and TV towers will not be disturbed. In other words, it's pretty much the same, but the federal control of Washington is pretty much gone. We've left. Sorry, we don't want you anymore. Don't need you. See you later. Now, as I said, the following conditions and details I've come up with for this new constitution, a secession solution, they do not violate anyone's present constitutional rights, nor their property rights, nor their civil rights, or their human rights. And like I said, we don't seek to further tax, regulate, or disarm anyone, except violent criminals, of course. Now, the new constitution would have in place a method to amend it as prescribed by law. And I certainly offer these new constitutional principles, these rules and ideals to the Tea Party, because I don't see the Tea Party as really having a firm platform or a rationally integrated philosophy and direction. I know they're for lower taxes and less spending, but I still think that they're overwhelmingly too pro-war, and they're not anti-government enough in the clarifying ways that I lay out. So in the meantime, as we move towards secession, all current states should nullify most, if not all, endlessly enacted federal laws. Arizona is a good example that should do that with their, not going along with the feds want, even though they say they're actually enforcing the laws that the feds are failing to enforce. Now, the following rules and the severe restrictions on government power, which are contained in this new constitution or secession solution and Bill of Rights that I offer for a strictly limited government, is somewhat similar to the current U.S. Constitution, but it also includes sound economics with the ethics of liberty at its center core and Austrian economics. And I always advocate pushing or promoting social tolerance and personal responsibility. So that's sort of like the preamble where I'm coming from, setting you up for the subcategories, which I'll get into now, because I'm just going to run through these. And you'll see how similar they are to what we have now in our Constitution, plus the other things I've added, which would make a big difference in binding the Constitution down with the chains that it has sort of broken free from. Now, as far as civil liberties, we have free speech, free press, religious freedom, freedom from illegal search and seizure, freedom of assembly. We still have freedom of association, freedom of contract, strong gun ownership rights. Fully informed juries, which is something everyone should know about. Fully informed juries mean that if you're serving jury duty, especially if it's a case of like drug possession, tax, so-called evasion, things like this, you can vote your conscience, although judges don't inform the juries of this. But in my world, we have fully informed juries, so they can judge the law. They might not be able to overturn it, but they can set people free. They can err on the side of the citizen, because actually the jury should be the most important entity in the courtroom because it represents the people. So in my constitution, fully informed juries are very important, and everybody is informed about them. You can learn it in school, and judges must tell juries this. Continuing on, there's term limits across the board. We don't want career politicians and bureaucrats. They can serve a few terms and then go back to the private sector. I have civil unions for same-sex couples. In my constitution, abortion remains legal with absolutely no tax funding, and there are no partial birth abortions. I believe abortion is a topic will never be resolved because there's too many people on both sides of it, of all political persuasions. Although on a brighter note, I have heard that there might be technology on the horizon where doctors could remove an unwanted pregnancy and transplant it into a couple or a person that is really seeking a child. So that could be very good news, and that could possibly negate the whole abortion issue. Also, the terminally ill are free to use any medication they choose and to make their own decisions in writing and or on video as to when and how to leave our world. I think it's just disgusting that people are put in jail for using medicinal marijuana. Terminally ill people are prosecuted or harassed for using whatever medication they want. I can't even conceive of telling a friend or neighbor or people I don't even know, oh, you can't do that. And I just think that's ridiculous. Now, still under civil liberties, there's, in the way I view things, objectively and intellectually, with the ethics of liberty and individual rights, there's no government regulation or censorship of the internet. There is no draft registration. There's no conscription. There's no drug war. There's no torture. There's no victimless crime laws. There's no persecution of holistic alternative medicine. There's no affirmative action, no government-enforced political correctness, and no judges appointed for life. What's that all about? Dictators in black robes. No thanks. There's no government-imposed travel restrictions. For example, you can go to Vietnam where we had that awful lengthy war with – American citizens can go there, but they can't go to Cuba. Oh, no. So a saying I like I learned from Lou Rockwell of Mises Institute is liberty for all and special privileges for none. Now, we'll get back into Austrian economics here. The economic system I promote is not pro-business per se, but it's rather pro-free enterprise. And this prohibits the blurring of the line between industry and limited government. The market, this is something everybody should know. This is I wish I was understood these things or was taught these things in high school or college. But when I learned economics there, I didn't really learn economics. I didn't know what I learned. It was boring. It was charts and graphs. And I didn't get into the meat of things till I discovered Austrian economics. And one of the primary components of Austrian economics is that the market is a constant discovery process and the entrepreneur is the central creative driving force of society. We need more entrepreneurs who invent, who create, who produce technology, innovation, and things that help help mankind. And, you know, it makes, of course, entrepreneurs often get wealthy of this because people vote with their money for their products, but they're serving the consumer, unlike the war machine and just more militarism, which is just destructive and destructive to society and to the nation and very as it bankrupts us. So the first economic duty of a government, and here I quote sort of paraphrasing from Henry Hazlitt, great American economist and a writer, the first economic duty of a government is to preserve and protect a true, honest, and competitive free market economy, which will flourish and promote diverse entrepreneurship in an atmosphere of micro-taxes and micro-regulations. Now, the regulations I've come up with are actually a bunch of no's to the following things. There's nothing wrong with private funding if people can get it from investors or banks or friends who want to invest. But in a true free market society, in a real capitalistic free market laissez-faire economy, it prohibits the following things. These are all prohibited. There is no central bank like a Federal Reserve System, which destroys the value of money and causes the trade cycle of boom and bust, which we're in right now. There's no barriers to market entry. If competitors, foreign and domestic, want to enter the market, they're free to enter the market. Special interest groups or other businesses cannot use government or the state to restrict entry into market because we all suffer from that. There's no government interference with trade, with free trade. There's no tax-funded bailouts. Banks are never too big to fail. Businesses are never too big to fail. The nerve of government bailing them out with people's money who are just trying to make a living. It's just so ridiculous. They're in bed together, and in my society, they're not in bed together. There's no government ownership of bankrupt businesses. There's no monopolistic political privilege for industry and government. Again, all these things are as how to put us on the path to real free markets and honest capitalism, not this awful crony capitalism that it's just the perversion of the free market, the perversion of capitalism. we spoke about this before, Don, when I mentioned it. It'd be like always playing out of tune, never in time, and in the same key with no concern for those very important foundations of music.
Yeah, when you mentioned Goodbye, Washington, D.C., I was thinking of a Broadway musical, but that definition you just gave shoots that idea in the foot. So,
well, you know, since people also listen with their eyes, you know, a Broadway musical would not be a bad idea. And yes, we'll have plenty of gays in there. Don't worry, there are plenty of gays in the Broadway thing. You know,
will they be the politicians?
Well, no, but let me tell a quick little joke here. What do you cross? What do you get when you cross 50 gay men and a Jewish guy?
I wouldn't begin to know the answer to that. So
actually, you do. Here's what you get: a Broadway production.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, now back to my nose. No nose. There would be no tax-funded subsidies for business and labor. There would be no monopolistic political privilege for doctors and lawyers. There's no government fixing of wages and prices like minimum wage laws or agriculture price supports. How come it's a crime if supposedly businesses fix wages or prices, but not if government does it? So there ain't no more in this new republic. There's no fixing of wages and prices by government. There's no crony capitalism. There's no corporate welfare. There's no corporate socialism. There's no state capitalism. And state capitalism and corporate socialism lead to the mixed economy. We don't want more of these government industry projects like the horrific situation with ethanol, which is very wasteful, which is probably destructive. And I think they want to raise the amount, I think, from 10% to 15%, which will mess up a lot of older cars. It's just a terribly wasteful program, and it's a you know, bonanza for the corn you know, farmers in this respect. You know, to pay farmers not to grow or to leave fields idle is ridiculous. It's like paying you know, Detroit not to produce cars. Well, they're not doing much of that anyway, but you know, it's ridiculous. Another thing, and this should make our people, friends on the left or the environmental crowd happy, there's no hemp prohibition. And those of you who know about the hemp plant, which is the cousin to the marijuana plant, know it's very sturdy, and it can be used for many different things, rope, you know, lumber, paint, different building supplies, clothing. It has many, many uses. So that alone would open up a whole new industry. In my world, you would see hemp growing as far as the eye can see. But I also humorously want to bring this up. There ain't going to be no price supports for hemp growers, or when marijuana is legal, we're not going to pay price supports to marijuana farmers when the price goes down. So I also had thought of that. I think it's kind of funny. There's no protectionism. Industries can they can come and go. They can fail, but they're not going to be protected from domestic or foreign competition. But they will all operate in an atmosphere of very, very micro taxes and micro regulations, so they'll be so much freer to invest, to accumulate capital, and thrive. There's no mandatory union membership. I myself, I'm very pro-employee, but I'm rather anti-union because I think they're monopolistic and anti-competitive, and instead of a sword, instead of a shield, they become a sword. I don't like the adversarial relationship that they try to put between business and labor. It's not good. Japan doesn't, as I understand, doesn't have too much of this problem. I don't even think Germany does. France does, but, you know, what a mess. There's no tax-funded farm welfare payments. There's no tax-funded sports welfare. I especially hate the fact that the billionaire owners and the millionaire players want the taxpayers to build them a stadium. I mean, that is so insulting. It should not be allowed. It shouldn't be in any state constitution. You know, there's no way, especially in economic times like this, that they expect us to build a stadium for them. That is ridiculous, especially with the kind of money that the owners have and what they pay these players. Let them build their own stadiums or borrow their own private funds for that. It's ridiculous. We got roads that need roads and bridges that need work. You know, it's so distorted. There's also no science welfare. If scientists want to go to the moon and outer space, there's nobody going to stop them from investing and building their own rocket ships. We can have some modern day Wright brothers building their rocket ships. We're not going to stand in their way. We're not going to tax and overregulate them. And there's no funded arts welfare. I mean, I'm a musician, have been most of my life. My garage, does my garage band deserve a subsidy? No way. I'm all for the arts, but I'm not for forcing people to pay for them or subsidize them. That's ridiculous. That is not, to me, that's not freedom for art either, that you're compelled to pay for art. Art should come from your heart and your subjective values. Don't you agree, Don?
Yes, you have to be careful, though, with GarageBand, because that's actually a cool program for music on the Mac. So,
well,
there's one exception to the
GarageBand. Yeah, and that's and Mac, well, that's private sector. So I'm all for GarageBands, you know, God bless them. I don't know if that's a uniquely American thing, because I know the Beatles had, I don't know if in Liverpool they had a band when they had that thing together. But a GarageBand, that's, you know, most of us have been in them. And in fact, I have one that happens to read music also. So my band can play, we can play that gritty sound, but we can also play slick. So garage bands, what a great, great institution they are.
Yeah. Now, you touched on some points, if I can make just
sure.
a brief comment, because many of the rules that are supposed to be in place, and these are federal laws, are usurping state laws, but in many instances, some of these states are not states at all, and they have never become part of any union, despite
yeah.
what we were taught.
Well, here's something else you'd probably agree with. You know, Don, a lot of these no-nos, these go for the seceding states or the individual republics, too. They don't need to push this crap on us either. Not just the federal government, as bad as they are. I mean, if my state seceded or other states, I would want them to follow these rules, too. Don't you agree?
Well, you know, of course. I think there's – and you could do a whole show on this topic, too, what I'm going to try to say in one quick sentence here.
Okay.
And that's the fact that there has been this secret corporate relationship which is called government, and it goes all the way down to the local level.
Yeah.
And according to the CAFR reports, they balance the books out to zero every year at the start of the next fiscal year. So where do those surpluses go? What happens to the debts? Well, this is part of the mess that we're in today.
Yeah.
The trillions and trillions, hundreds of trillions of dollars, hundreds. Even quadrillions, you could say. These are all data entry things that they're doing. So they're creating a false economy out of all of this corruption on top of it.
All right. Right.
And expecting us to pay the bill.
It's legalized corruption. Well, because, you know, all governments partake in organized theft. So, you know, that's why these things I've all listed here are my way of really – neutering what they're up to, because when they can't do these things, they'll be forced to just protect our rights. You know, the police will be there in a restricted role because they ain't going to be busting people for possession of drugs. There's no drug war, which comes a little bit later. But these things I've listed would sure nip in the bud a lot of these things that they're getting away with, where they blur the line between government and industry, and the politically connected businessmen always thrive. You know, no matter what happens, they're the ones that they thrive. Like Goldman Sachs, you know, they're on that government tit, they're on the government gravy train, and they never seem to disappear, this crowd. They adapt and they become one with the parasitic class. So this is what I seek to sever. And the fact that also when I get to this, that there's no income tax, well, then they can't use that money to pay the debt that the Federal Reserve extorts from us. And since there's no central bank, that you know, neuters them quite a bit. So what I've come up with, I hope, would really snip them good. There's also no government-owned and operated postal service. You know, we would opt out of that. Because right now, if one were to deliver first class mail, they would be arrested because of monopoly mail status. Yet there's an antitrust department. I believe what the African American economist Walter Williams said years ago about the trust laws should be used against the federal government and then abolished, because in trust law, a lot of our listeners probably don't know this. Antitrust law, seldom do individuals ever sue for antitrust. competitors use antitrust laws to bash competitors, that businesses use it to bash competitors. That is really more of the outcome as opposed to individuals.
And governments use it to take over corporations.
Right, at the behest of their privileged class. So in the society I espouse, this does not happen. And I think you'll agree so far that everything I've said does not threaten anybody's liberty or property. Now, it might threaten the politically connected ones who are on the government gravy train, but Mr. and Mrs. Blue Collar or just regular white collar folks, nothing I am advocating is going to give them any harm. In fact, they'll have more disposable income and more opportunity.
What do you propose, PK, to stop this siphoning of local funds into the system, into the investment pool, without the average citizen's awareness or foreknowledge?
You mean money that's our taxes that go to the feds or the local governments?
Well, the monies that go into the general funds and the various departmental funds of local government, these monies are collected and they're operated sort of like a revolving door.
Do you mean through the property tax and sales taxes?
Not necessarily taxes. This could be bond issues, mill.
Oh, yeah.
But what they do is they secretly invest all this money, and they don't tell us where the money really is. So where are they getting their money for operating expenses? Well, I would submit that likely they're getting regular deposits, which are siphoned through the state government.
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Through the county governments and then to the localities that are requesting that money. And something is given up for that. And again, that's another issue. I submit that it's real estate and businesses that are hijacked.
Yeah. Well,
and this is government doing it.
Oh, yeah. And again, when they blur the line between government or business, then, it makes it harder to decipher who's doing what. Because when government is guilty of something, they pass the buck. It's hard to find who the culprits are. At least in the private sector, it's more easy to find somebody, the accountable, hold somebody accountable or a business accountable. So as I go through these things I advocate, I see where it would close the door for a lot of this and greatly restrict their source of revenue and also their war-making abilities. So there would be not far less cozy relationship between the states and the feds and much more transparency and accountability. Now, there would also be no government-enforced FDA-AMA pharmaceutical monopoly. No persecution or harassment of alternative medicine. No persecution or harassment of alternative energy. No irresponsibly encouraging government-subsidized flood insurance. I mean, nature, I'm not a rabid environmentalist by any means, but I understand nature enough that if you build your house, Mr. Usually well-to-do person, by the ocean or, by the river, chances are you're going to deal with flooding or some tragic, natural disasters, which is one thing. But to expect us to pay your subsidized flood insurance, no, that's got to end. That's got to be phased out. And also with an atmosphere of microtaxes, people would have the money to pay the increased insurance premiums, because the way it is now, if private insurance won't or is reluctant to insure these properties in these dangerous areas, then that's a market force telling us that, hey, you know what? You shouldn't build there. And if you do, Don ain't going to see his taxes buying you a new house. Also, no government-controlled mandatory health care. No tax-funded foreign aid. Now, citizens are free to donate to charities at home or abroad, but there is no tax-funded foreign aid. And what does tax-funded foreign aid do? It props up foreign dictators. It props up governments that should collapse, and it subsidizes inefficient industries. It is like giving political welfare to other countries, unlike social welfare at home here. It's political welfare and welfare to other countries, and it has a negative effect. And plus the fact that it robs Americans of their own taxes and their own revenue, which is unconstitutional to do, but both parties do it. So what I lay out is in my system, yes, there could be different political parties, but they cannot thwart these constitutional restrictions. There is also no government ownership of sports complexes, airports, convention centers, trains, radio, or TV stations. No more of that nonsense. Now, because it is their own funds at risk to liability lawsuits, the insurance industry will play a larger role in regulating and inspecting its policyholders, such as the oil industry, coal mines, utility companies, shipping lines, hospitals, airlines, cruise ships, you know, trucking companies, manufacturers, and many other industries. Insurance industry will play a much more important regulating role. In fact, I used to work on cruise ships as a musician, and these multi-million dollar cruise ships, and who would come out and check them? The Coast Guard. And I'm thinking, well, the Coast Guard's checking. Why is that? It's not the Coast Guard's money that's going to it's not going to cost the Coast Guard anything if these ships sink or go under or have massive damage. They're going to cost Lloyd's of London. I'd rather have Lloyd's of London sending their agents out there checking on things because it is they who stand to lose. You know, not the government. They're just there to, you know, interfere with things. I also favor a weakening of the current patent and copyright laws by at least 75%. I'm not opposed to intellectual property rights, but I think the system is so rigged that it causes us to pay much higher prices for much longer periods of time, and it restricts more market entry into markets. So I'm for a massive weakening of the copyright laws. I know that my friends in the Mises Institute, in the Austrian Economics, some of the head intellectuals and professors and that would probably disagree, but I'm sure they'd say it was in the right direction. Now, here's another important thing. Foreign investment is most welcome and secure. If China or Italy or Japan wants to come and buy a factory or buy part of, GM because, you know, the plant is still there, the equipment, we should welcome foreign investment. That's a great thing. They're putting money back into our country and hiring Americans. I don't care if the bosses are foreign-owned. It doesn't matter. We're all human beings, and they're going to hire us. Good for them. I mean, Americans have factories overseas. You know, what's wealth and trade flows between nations. It has to flow back and forth. Now, here's one you'll like, Don. We oppose world government and any call for a fiat global currency. There is no government membership or political subservience to the UN, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. There is no membership to NATO, NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, CAFTA. There is no Export-Import Bank membership. I'd rather abolish that awful entity. We're not beholden to the EU or any other statist, mercantilist, tax-funded globalist scheme. That crap is done. We will not belong to that. If individuals want to join these organizations because they think they're, you know, powerful or power hungry, well, you know, they can join, but they cannot get our newly seceded entities to join these institutions, which are undermining a lot of the world's economy also, these institutions. And who would scream the most? All of those, the David Rockefellers, the Rothschild, all of that globalist clique who are not part of the New World Order conspiracy, they're the ones that would bitch the most, believe me. They're the ones that would bitch the most, not Main Street. It is that globalist crowd. They are the ones. They are the in a sense, they're the super capitalists, but they're the super statist capitalists. They need the state. They need coercion. They need subsidy to further their aims. Well, my country or the countries I would support – are totally against all this and will not be part of it. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree. Now, Fred, I got to keep you aware of the time here.
That's right.
We're approaching about 3 minutes left here.
And okay.
Should consider closing out. I have a lot that I could add to what you said. I think just adding the unincorporation of all of these incorporated cities and towns and townships across the country. Those are monopolies, you see. That's how the federal government has seized this power. It's with the collusion of county and or boroughs,
Sure. Well, all government has a monopolistic force, but decentralization is a good thing. And that's where I'm, you know, that's where I'm headed.
Yeah. Yes.
So, of course, there's other things we could add and this and that, but these are like sort of my basic guidelines. I have a couple other topics we can speak about next time. I didn't realize it would take this long on this particular one, but I've enjoyed breaking it down. And as you can see, all these things I have no to would be a great reversal. You would see the economy growing probably almost overnight to abolish all these controls and whatnot. So that's where I'm coming from. Next week, we can talk about the monetary system. We can talk about my views on taxation. I'm not opposed to paying some micro taxes. I'm not opposed to paying, you know, small taxes, which were, you know, originally intended, but nothing like we have today, which is just such a farce. I mean, because nothing is free. People don't work for free, yeah. You know, so – And of course, is so, my views on Social Security, education, healthcare, these things will come up next time. But I've enjoyed laying this out. And in my view, I hope you enjoyed my way of reforming capitalism. I'd like to be the great reformer in this case of putting it on its rational path, which is not a perverted path by the special interests.
Well, I appreciate you including me on your show, PK. And you know,
you're welcome. And I hope you're enjoying the you know, the Austrian economics and how this is mixed in with the ethics of liberty and, you know, individualism and market, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to see it in practice. That's really what it's all about.
But, yeah, and whatever I'm talking about is not a pipe dream. It's not it could work in practice. It just need to get the government out of the way. But when I say that, I mean it. I'm not Mitch McConnell or the other crowd who, you know, these status quo politicians. They talk it, then they get elected. They do something the opposite.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fred, I guess I'll see you, PK. I'll see you next week.
Freddie Hubbard on trumpet. Yes, that's right. I'd also like to thank my friend Lord Nelson for helping me out. He's another co-producer. Great guy, good family man, and computer wizard. So I'll see all of you next week, same time, same place. Thanks again, and my thanks to bbsradio.com.